Theater of the Mind. The lights are lit. The stage is set. The curtain rises. Welcome to the Theater of the Mind. Yes, the mind. The place where the haunt really takes place. Wherever we actually set up. In our basement, in the garage, on our front lawn. Ultimately, we're staging this little show inside these people's heads. There's a lot of different ways to get in there, and there's a lot of things we can do once we're there. But first, we have to ask ourselves, once we get inside their head, what is our actual goal? What experiences do we want the people in our audience to have? We have to think of that first before we actually build the haunt. A haunt can scare, a haunt can make people laugh, mystify them, or awe them with its beauty. It can do a lot of different things. At its core, a haunt is a form of entertainment. People go there because they want to have fun. And, of course, a different audience is going to have a different sense of what's fun. This could vary according to the ethnicity of the audience, the different cultural influences in the area where you haunt, and, of course, probably most importantly, age. I'll get into these in a little more depth in the next show, but you get the idea. So, before we start planning out the haunt itself, we need to figure out just exactly what kind of a show we want to give them and what experience we want them to take away with them. All that being said, let's talk about fear. Divorced of any context. Fear sort of takes place on a continuum. It starts out as basically questioning whether something is on the up and up and ends in blind panic. And there's a lot that happens in between there. Some psychologists start this continuum with distrust. A person just questions whether something is on the up and up. Is this potentially harmful? Is it what it seems to be? As we progress down this continuum, this distrust becomes a sense of apprehension. I don't think this is a very good idea. Eventually, that apprehension leads to a full sense of unease. I know this is a bad idea. And it is that unease that forms the foundation of actual fear. And that fear can grow and grow until it becomes an actual terror. For our purposes, we can pretty much ignore those first parts of distrust and apprehension, because when you think about it, they really don't apply to a haunt. People aren't going to question whether things are what they seem because, well, it's Halloween for crying out loud. They're at a haunt. They know they're going to be seeing weird, freaky stuff, and that's what they came here for. So I guess we could say that that sense of unease is really our starting point in a haunt. Now the question is, how do you get that feeling of unease if the people already have a general idea of what's in store for them? They know they're in for a show, and that nothing inside is really going to hurt them. So how do we put them into an uneasy feeling? Well, they're probably going to take care of that primarily themselves. Way back in the day, when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." He was talking about the Depression, but that statement really does have a lot of application in other areas, and it was never truer than when you apply it to a haunted attraction. Think about it. People know that they're not going to get hurt in there. The guy with the chainsaw is not going to attack them, the zombies are not going to bite them, the werewolves aren't going to actually run them down and tear them apart. So why do they get scared? Well, it's not really the props themselves, it's the fact that they know that they're going to be popping up. They know the guy with the saw is going to come charging at them. Whether or not he poses an actual harm is pretty much irrelevant. What they fear is fear itself. They're not scared of the props. They're scared of being scared by the props. This little bit of circular logic really works to our advantage. When you think about it, they've already done part of our work for us. They're fearing fear itself. Anticipation has already provided that baseline scare. So we mentioned unease, fear, terror. What about horror? Where does that fit in? And is there any difference? Terror and horror are not synonyms. They really do refer to different things. Most people think of terror as being a degree of fear, pure fear. But horror adds an additional element, a sort of disgust or revulsion or recoil. To coin a phrase from one of my favorite authors, Hunter S. Thompson, fear and loathing. That's what horror is. Anne Radcliffe was a Gothic novelist in the early 19th century. She was one of the first Gothic novelists, actually. She was the first person to actually put terror and horror together and compare the two of them in an essay. To her, terror is characterized by what she called an obscurity or indeterminacy in its treatment of potentially horrible events. To her, this indeterminacy is what led to the sublime. She believed that pure terror actually elevated degrees of awareness. She said in her essay that terror expands the soul and awakens the faculties to a high degree of life. Horror, on the other hand, she said, freezes and nearly annihilates them, with its basically unambiguous displays of atrocity. Devendra Varma, a modern author and editor of over 200 books on Gothic fiction, says that, quote, "The difference between terror and horror is the difference between awful apprehension and sickening realization, between the smell of death and stumbling against a corpse." Notice that there's two main concepts in horror there, sickening and realization. There's that element of physical recoil and revulsion, but also realization. Terror is something rather mysterious and almost entirely mental. Horror is very specific and defined to an event that has been witnessed. From this, one could say that terror is more a state of mind and horror is more of a reaction. So how do we mysteriously put people into that frame of mind? Well, that state of terror can largely come from the atmospherics of a haunt. The horror would tend to come from the props themselves. Pure terror reached indirectly through atmosphere is obviously a little trickier, but it can add so much to the overall experience. Terror and horror work hand in hand. Elements of the horrifying can make a great backdrop for a person to walk through to help unhinge their frame of mind. The body parts, the skeletons, the bloody handprints on the wall, the instruments of torture. All of these can put the screws on that feeling of unease and elevate a person into a terrified state. And of course, once they're terrified, when the real horror strikes them, it hits them so much harder. And when we design our displays and our walkthroughs, it helps to think in terms of these different kinds of fear, the unease, the apprehension, the terror, the horror, and see what the best balances are in different areas. I think my all-time favorite quote concerning using the different types of fear and shock in a completed body of work came from Stephen King in his book Danse Macabre. He stated, "I recognize terror as the finest emotion, and so I will try to terrorize the reader. But if I find that I cannot terrify, I will try to horrify. And if I find that I cannot horrify, I'll go for the gross out. I'm not proud." Mr. King, you are my hero. From the Theater of the Mind, I am Revenant, and this is Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Also, follow us on Instagram at hauntcast.channel. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Hauntcast. Join the Hauntcast Facebook group. Links are in the show notes. And it would be a big help if you could share with all your haunt brethren. Until next time, stay scary.